McCarthy Insurance Group, serving the community for over 70 years. For home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance, log on to mig.ie or free phone 1800 50 11 11. Probably your best call in 2024. Charles McCarthy Insurance is trading as McCarthy Insurance Group is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
My guest tonight is an American author, historian and cultural political consultant. Michael Walsh joins me now from County Clare, where I hear he's just about managed to dig himself out of the snow. Good evening, Michael. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you this evening?
Hey, I'm great, Gary. Thank you so much for having me on. It's we've got our snow shovel. You know, New Englanders are hardy folk, and we can handle this little bit of snow here in Ireland.
You're well able for it. As my father used to say, he lived in New York his whole life, and he'd come home to Ireland from time to time, and he always commented, he said, sure, that's only a dusting of snow. You know, like New York could keep going with 4 feet of snow, but Ireland would shut down with a couple of centimetres.
Yeah, we call this July, where I live in rural New England, so it's just fine.
I love it. Well, let's get to it. I want to ask you, first of all, were you surprised Donald Trump won?
No, I wasn't. I was a supporter of the president in 2016. I was a supporter of his campaign in 2020. Niall and I obviously have talked about this quite a bit, and with other guests as well. I felt, because I am in touch directly with the inner circle of the Trump people, that we had a very good chance going in. And it was mostly the media fog and disinformation, to use one of the left's favorite words, that had people thinking it was going to be close. In reality, it's not close. It wasn't close. And you'll see the results of this mandate coming very soon.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, in 2016, I was working in television, and I remember at the time remarking to people in the newsroom, I said, you're missing something here. And I knew he would win in 2016. 2020, I wasn't all that sure, and I was fairly convinced that he was going to win this time as well. And I wasn't far off with my prediction in terms of an electoral college win and a popular vote, which, as you can imagine, when I told people around me in Ireland, they thought I was mad. But it turns out I was right.
Yeah.
And do you think that people in Ireland and maybe anywhere outside of America just don't seem to understand what it is that makes American people actually tick when it comes to choosing presidents?
I think that's absolutely right. And one of the reasons, especially here in Ireland, is the media is 100% in the tank for the left. So you really only get one side of the story here in Ireland. And obviously, not only do I have lots of friends here, but I have lots of blood relatives here, many of whom live very close to me. And yet their knowledge of American politics is so distorted by the media. And I find this strange, Gary, because so many of us are like me, who have an Irish branch and an American branch. You know, everybody I know here has a relative in Australia, a relative in New Zealand, people in the United States, people in Canada. You'd think there'd be a slightly more balanced view of what's going on in these countries. But I think the fact that the government, which I refer to on Twitter as the racket, it's a uniparty of two fake opposition parties, and it deals out money to the media. This is insane from an American point of view, that the government actually finances the media. It controls access to the ballot. It gives money to political parties once they get over a certain percentage, which chokes the life out of independent parties. And it is basically answerable to nobody once it gets into power. This really causes an information blackout in Ireland. And there's very few people, obviously, your show, Niall's show, is one of them, that bring the other side. I'm not asking for 100% agreement or anyone saying, well, you're absolutely right. But it's nice to hear the other side. When I teach in various colleges and universities, I tell my students, if you can't argue the other side convincingly, you don't know your own argument. And I think that's the problem we have here in Ireland.
I would agree with that. And I will also go one step further and say that I get a sense, you may agree or you may disagree with this, I get a sense that the Irish obsession with the Democrats in America really does go back to JFK, and it sort of just stayed there. And every single Democrat president that came along was like, oh, they got to be good because they're Democrat. And that may well have been true up until recent times, when the Democrat Party has completely transformed. They are not the Democrats of Bill Clinton. They're an entirely new proposition. And I think people over this side of the Atlantic don't seem to understand that transformation.
No, I think that's absolutely right. The Irish love for the Democrats goes back to Tammany Hall, which, by the way, we took over from anti-Irish nativists in the 19th century. And once Boss Tweed was taken down, the next sachems, grand sachems of Tammany Hall, were all Irishmen and operating a very tight and tough machine that in many ways was quite good, and it was extremely good for the new immigrants. So I would recommend to anybody listening, there's a wonderful book called Plunkett of Tammany Hall, which was written by another Irishman, a guy named Bill Reardon, who would listen to Plunkett, who was a Tammany Hall fixer, give these impromptu speeches, and he wrote them all down. And what Tammany did, which is what endeared itself to the Irish, the Jews, and the Italians, all of us came right around the same time, was it worked to help the people. It got the patronage jobs. Yes, it was also corrupt, but it made for better working conditions. It did a lot of very, very good things until it finally ran out of gas. So the Irish affection for the Democrats goes to Tammany Hall, which was founded, weirdly enough, by Aaron Burr, who killed Alexander Hamilton in a duel, one of the founding fathers. But it supported Alf Landon, who was the first Catholic candidate for president, who was whipped pretty soundly by Herbert Hoover. They loved Roosevelt. They loved JFK. Of course, as you know, the old saying here is everybody had a picture of the Pope and John F. Kennedy over the fireplace. That's finally beginning to break up, but it took a long time. It took 120-some years for this to actually start happening.
So President-elect Trump is in Mar-a-Lago at the moment, and he's appointing, he's nominating people for his cabinet, and it's getting lots and lots of coverage. And I find it interesting to me that friends of mine that knew nothing of American politics 3 or 4 weeks ago and never even had any interest in who Biden nominated to certain positions,
now they're experts.
Exactly. They're telling me, how could RFK Jr. head up health when, in fact, I mean, there's many, many departments in America that are headed up by people who have nothing to do with the actual portfolio they've been given. But if you could talk to us tonight about maybe pick three that have stood out to you. We saw Matt Gaetz has pulled out of the nomination process. I was not surprised.
Yes.
Go through the top three for us and illuminate people that may not understand what's going on.
Well, I think the people that Trump has gathered around him, and this is a very conscious decision that they've made over the past several years, starting with Elon Musk. I think when Musk came out, so to speak, as at least a libertarian conservative, that was huge, because the left likes to use the expression, it gave them permission to X. Well, this is a man who was among the most admired men in America. He's the richest man in the history of the planet. He could buy and sell Ireland tomorrow with the change that's loose in his couch. I mean, that's how much money this guy has. And he's really not someone to be trifled with. And when we get to the free speech part of this discussion, if we do, I'll explain why. When Musk came over, that was very, very big. Bobby coming over, the scion of the Kennedys, the man whose uncle and whose father were both assassinated by crazy people. John Kennedy was killed by a communist who had defected to Moscow and then come back very suspiciously with a KGB-approved wife, and then shot the president after trying to redefect back to the Soviet Union in 1963. And then, of course, Bobby Kennedy Sr. was shot by a Palestinian. Bobby has experienced this. He is very big on vaccines, as you know, and he has a reputation of being a nut. But after what we saw with the COVID hoax, and it was a hoax, It was a tremendously destructive overreaction to a Chinese bioweapon that really didn't quite work as well as they thought it was going to work. Bobby is very, very big. I think Joe Rogan coming out at the end, people in Ireland probably don't know who Joe Rogan is, but I was having this conversation with some guys at the gym the other day. Joe Rogan is the average American guy. That's who he is. He lives in Texas, where average American guys live. He's a gun guy. He's a bodybuilder. He's a libertarian. He's a leave me alone. And I think the most important thing for not only Ireland, but Europe to understand is Americans don't like to be pushed around or ordered. We started this country by telling the Brits to get out, and they left after we shot enough of them. And we have continued to operate as a kind of island fortress in the middle of this vast ocean. And that part of the American character hasn't changed. And what the Democrats mistook was they thought, well, if we get enough of these minorities and people from third world countries and not European, blah, 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 they'll... No, I explained to European friends of mine who came to America, when you come to America, you become Americanized. You put away the old things. For example, I live right now where my great-grandmother was born. Her birthplace is my studio. But when she came to America, she dropped her Irish language immediately. She didn't know a word of English, but she learned English. None of her children learned the Irish language. She never talked about Ireland. She married a man from County Clare as well. They never talked about Ireland. It was, in a way, we are now Americans, and the past is dead to us. Now, it takes second, third-generation people like me to come back and kind of reconnect, and now I have Irish grandchildren. So that all worked out great. But the American uniqueness is this machine that turns everybody into an American. And by that I mean you prize freedom, you prize freedom of speech, because that is the First Amendment. That is the most important thing about being American. You prize liberty in all of its manifestations. And I think Ireland needs to reconnect with its own Irishness. I mean, there's 40 million of us in the United States, 40 million. And we love this country. We love Ireland. And yeah, I know sometimes native Irish here will say, oh, yeah, you have a sentimental notion about, you know, Patty, and I'll take you home again, Kathleen, and blah, blah, blah. But no, Americans really do care what happens here. And we're watching what's happening here. And I think that's really important to understand.
That's interesting that you say that, because my own father moved to the States, emigrated to America in the 50s, and my mum and her sisters, they went there in the 60s, and a similar thing. I mean, you went over there and you became American. You became part of, and they became quite patriotic as well. My dad loved America and my mum loved America, and they still do. I mean, my aunt still watches every election and talks about it. They're still politically involved. So that idea of going to America to be an American and leaving it all behind is absolutely true. I totally agree with you. But in terms of the picks...
I just want to say one thing about that. But they retain their Irishness. My grandfather, whose mother was born here, in my house, actually, he went to the Irish American Club, which is right across the street. He associated with other Irish Americans. They stayed as a very tight group for a long time. So they still had the love for the old country, but the allegiance now was to the new country. And I think that's the interesting distinction, because no one else in the world has this kind of bifocal relationship to their home countries. And it's one of the things that I think makes America really a great country and why it's so powerful.
Yes, no, you said it better than I did, because it's you're encouraged to fall in love with the country, and it's generational, because I love America, and so does my brother as well, and our American passports are extremely important to us. But I just want to pin you down on the picks that he made. You mentioned RFK Jr. and Matt Gaetz and everything. Is it all just a little bit of, you know, a little bit of drama, the way people are going on about some of the picks? Because some of them are actually quite... you know, reasonable. Like Linda McMahon is a very accomplished woman, and she'll be probably very effective as an education secretary.
Yeah, well, I think, look, these picks didn't just come out of the hat. They've been prepping for this for a long time now, at least a year or two. There have been various private groups that have discussed, have talked to people, have begun to float earlier, floating names because they felt that Biden was so awful and so horrible and clearly such a rutabaga for so many years, but it was covered up by the press until one day he was in that debate with Trump and everybody saw him for who he really was. So they were ready for this. Linda McMahon is fine. She ran for Senate in Connecticut, which is the state I live in the United States. Who else have we got here? We've got,
Do you think?
Vivek, Ramaswamy.
Michael, do you think?
He's also very good.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think maybe he knew Matt Gaetz wouldn't get through? He knew all along.
I don't really know. I mean, Matt Gaetz, I don't know Matt Gaetz. I've never met him. I've met a lot of these people we're talking about, but I don't know him. And it's possible. I think people like to think sometimes the president-elect plays four-dimensional chess. Anything can happen with Matt Gaetz. He resigned his seat in the current Congress, but he'd been elected to the next Congress. So if he wants to, he can go right back and be back in the House. Or DeSantis, who's the governor, Ron DeSantis, who's the governor of Florida, could appoint him to the Senate seat that's being vacated by Marco Rubio, who will become Secretary of State. Rubio has really grown, I think, in the last 8 or so years, six to 12 years, whatever, however long he's been a senator now. And he's very good on foreign policy. And the key is these people have been chosen for expertise, not for political, purely political considerations. That Bobby knows something about vaccines. He has an animus against Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx and the people who foisted the whole disaster of COVID on the world, really, but on the United States in particular. Musk is a libertarian. He wants freedom. He wants to go to Mars. I mean, Musk has said, I want to die on Mars. That's his life's goal. He really wants to do this. And our government has turned so sclerotic. We put a man on the moon back in 1969, and that was really the end of the space program. I know growing up then, I was born in 1949, I thought we'd be on Jupiter by now. But, we turned away from that. And I think the whole notion that all of these people want to make literally true America great again, that is to say freedom, prosperity, open to everybody. Anybody who wants to play can play. And if you're good, you win. And if you're not good, you learn the hard way. You can't guarantee results. I would love to play center field for the New York Yankees, but at 75 years old, and I'm not ever going to do that. So that's ruled out for me.
I'm more of a Mets guy, but Michael.
I can't just write my books. Oh, Mets, come on. That's natural. You have to. I'm a Red Sox fan, but I was, you're born that way. You're born into a Catholic church. You're born as a Red Sox fan, so that's really can't help it. Anyway, it's I think the picks have been very good. Dr. Oz, I'm a little fuzzy about, but let's talk about the Irish election. I want to hear what you think about that. That's something that's concerning me quite a bit.
We'll get to the Irish election because I just have a couple of more Trump questions because I know people are fascinated by that. But I do want to know what you think about the Irish election because we've been talking about it here for a couple of weeks and I want to get your take. But he's going to be sworn in the 20th of January. What is he going to do about Ukraine, do you think?
It'll be over very, very quickly. The Ukraine thing, again, is 99% of the Irish population, certainly the government, is on the Ukrainian side. Just a little bit of personal history. I was in Russia when Chernobyl blew up. So I go way back with the USSR. I spent the years between 1986 and 1991 in and out of the Soviet Union. Also, I was in Berlin when the wall came down. So I was in and out of East Germany and all of the Warsaw Pact nations during my career as a journalist for Time magazine and also independently as an author. So my perspective on the Russia-Ukraine situation is quite a bit different from what you read in the papers here and from what the government says. I think it will end. I think that it will end with a settlement in which Russia will take the territory it's already conquered. I think that Trump will put pressure on NATO not to expand into Ukraine, which is actually was the deal that James A. Baker III, who was Poppy Bush's Secretary of State, made with Gorbachev in order to allow German reunification to happen. I think that will get over. My question to you is, will the Ukrainians go home after that?
Well, that'll be something we'll have to figure out in the next year. I mean, because it is interesting times about what's going to happen around the world with Donald Trump in charge. Many say that, you know, they'll say, oh, things are much more precarious now with Donald Trump as president. And meanwhile, we have Joe Biden shooting US missiles into Russia. So where you square that and how you square that is, I suppose, in your politics, I don't know where you find them.
Well, this is the crucial thing. We have way too long of an interregnum between presidents. Effectively, Trump is president now. Biden is completely mentally incapacitated. He can barely talk. He wanders around. He's irrelevant. He's been irrelevant since the day he was elected in 2020. But he's gone, baby, gone. And now Harris has been disposed of because you saw what a lightweight imbecile actually she is. And I spent many years in California working in Hollywood, so I was familiar with her from my days in Los Angeles as well. Trump is effectively the president, but the Democrats can still hurt people. They can still bring people in immigration-wise, semi-legally, as they're doing now. They can continue to provoke a war with Putin's Russia, which is insane. I just want to say to everybody who thinks that Ukraine is a hill worth dying on, read a book by Annie Jacobson called Nuclear War, a Scenario. The minute that first nuke is used, the whole planet goes, boom, that's it, it's over. So is the Ukraine really, really worth it? You have to think about that, and I don't see that argument being had here at all.
Well, we'll see what happens. Before we get to Ireland, I do want to get your take on where the Democrats are now, because they took quite a loss this time. They lost the White House, the House, the Senate, the popular vote. And not only, apart from the numbers and apart from, you know, the winning spoils, there's a feeling that they really need to rebuild. Where do you think they are at the moment?
Well, I'll tell you where they are. I have a very close friend. Being old, one thing is that you have friends that you've known for many, many, you know, decades, and it seems like yesterday that you met them. So who is a lefty, who is a labor guy from New Jersey, Jewish kid, not a kid anymore, he's my age, but he's sort of the classic lefty, old-fashioned lefty, for those of us who, I lived in Manhattan for many years when I worked for Time. He and I are on the same page. The Democrats have abandoned their working class roots. They've abandoned that Tammany Hall voting bloc, which got the Irish voting for them, which got the Jews voting for them, which got the Italians voting for them, all throughout the 19th century and well into the 20th century. And Trump has just picked up those pieces. He did great with the working class. And the Democrats now have become the party of obscenely rich, except for Musk, of course, and very, very poor people. So there's the great middle, and America is a country of the great middle, moved sharply to the right. You looked at California, it ain't as blue as it used to be, and New York State, and Trump almost won New Jersey, which is, you know, that's the home of the Sopranos, for crying out loud. So there's been some big changes, and he and I agree that there needs to be two functioning parties. They need to have two very different views of how government should be conducted, but within the context of we love the country and we don't want to see it destroyed. The worst president that we've had is Obama, who I have to look at every time I stop at Obama Plaza to gas up my car back and forth to Dublin, who said we're 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America. And a lot of people heard that as, oh, we're going to fix all these social ills. But I, as a boy of the 60s, knew exactly what that meant, which is this is Marxist, cultural Marxist, neo-Marxist transformation of the entire country. And Obama did his best to do that. And he effectively has been president for the last 4 years, you know, with Joe Biden. But that's now over. And I think another misapprehension, you hear this a lot, is America is a 50-50 country. It's not a 50-50 country. The voting popular vote breaks down 50-50, but that doesn't matter. And it's very hard to explain to Ireland and to Europeans that we are not one country voting all at once. We're 50 separate states, 13 of which came together, big states, little states, right, all along the eastern seaboard to throw their lot together. But the little states needed to be protected from the big states. Otherwise, New York and California would now run everything. And you don't want that because they have very different outlooks on life and needs and everything else. So I would say the country is more like 75-25 in terms of center-right, right at this point. And the left is now walking around with their heads in their hands saying, what did we do wrong? And they have two choices. One is to get themselves right with Jesus, which is what my leftist friends and I are talking about. Let's get a sane Democrat Party back again. And the other is to double down and say, Trump's a racist, he's a sexist, what's wrong with white women? They didn't vote for abortion. You know, we want transsexuals, we want men in the girls' bathrooms, we want all this stuff. And the people of America have unequivocally rejected that. That's woke is over. It's too bad about Jaguar, because I like Jags, but it's too bad about Jaguar, because they just ran that big woke advertisement. Well, woke is so November 4th. It's over, baby, over. And
well,
you'll
Michael,
see this happening.
No, I don't want to cut across you, but I've only literally got 2 minutes left, and I do want to get your take on the Irish election. And thank you so much for being so illuminating when it comes to the US. You're a man after my own heart. I'm always explaining to people that America is not like every other country. I know it's 50 countries. But just in terms of the Irish election, quickly, do you think we're going to be experiencing some change on the 29th of November, or more of the same?
Well, I think to be really brief, and I've made this clear in some of the things I write on Twitter, by the way, immigration is the number one issue. The parties don't want to talk about it, obviously, because they're all in on this strange quest to bring the world to Ireland's doorstep. But I think that's a hidden issue. Certainly when I talk to my friends and neighbors here, that's the number one thing they care about. All the surveys show that's what they care about. I think you have a problem with, in a way, you have too much democracy in the sense that you've got too many candidates that FGFF, which are now the same party because they are the racket, can freeze out the other parties. And I really don't like the electoral system at all. It's this transferable vote thing to an American means fraud. It just means fraud. If you can move votes around, that ain't good. And the only other country that uses this system, as far as I know, is Malta. And this is a gift from the Brits, of course, to us Irish. When they finally pulled out, they left us with this really unwieldy system. And I wonder if Ireland wouldn't be better served rethinking that system going forward. We'll see what happens. But, you know, the one thing that was encouraging was the destruction of the women amendments, which seems to have caught the racket with its pants down. And I hope that spirit is still here. You know, everyone in America says, boy, I thought the Irish were fighters. Why did they just roll over for all this stuff? Well, I guess we'll find out pretty soon, won't we?
Couple of weeks to go, Michael. And I have to say, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that conversation. And I'd like to stay in touch with you because we could have some nice little chats about American politics. It's hard to come by people you can chat to about that stuff, you know?
Well, I ain't going anywhere, so anytime.
Brilliant. And look after yourself and stay warm down there in the snow and don't go slipping.
Okay.
Thank you very much for joining me tonight, Michael.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate the chat. That was really, really good.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.